to learn are independent skills, skills that other children use without needing an instruction or cue from another, playing independently, going to the toilet when the need arises, greeting a parent who returns from work, giving a toy to a sister who asks to share. These are a few of many examples in which we expect young children to respond in certain ways without a parental instruction. If you look carefully at each of these complex independent skills, you will see the function and the reinforcers in them as well. Children play independently because they enjoy the activity, positive reinforcement. Children use a toilet independently because using the toilet avoids the inconvenient and uncomfortable situation caused by soiling their clothes, negative reinforcement, and also because of the social praise young children receive when they master this complex task, positive reinforcement. Greeting a beloved parent results in an affectionate exchange, a positive reward. Sharing toys avoids conflict, negative reinforcement, and continues pleasant social exchanges, positive reinforcement. These are very well-learned chains of behaviors that children can carry out without instruction. But when they were first learned, there were clear antecedents and direct rewards for each of them. Children with ASD can also learn these complex chains and carry them out independently as long as there are clear antecedents and reinforcing consequences for them. You are teaching these with every chapter in Part 2 of this book. What if you want to teach a new skill but are unsure of the antecedent, the cue you should use? A good way to figure out what antecedent to use to cue a behavior is to think about what stimulus cues this behavior for most other children your child's age. Whenever possible, we want to use the same antecedents for children with autism that other children use. If you are not sure, observe children at the park, at school, in church, at the grocery store, and in other settings. Or ask friends or family members what their children respond to. Using the same antecedents that other parents use with their children means your child will be able to understand cues that many different people might use. This is why we have been suggesting that you use very typical, though simplified, language and gestures in working with your child. The words and gestures you are using and the toys, songs, games, and daily routines you have been teaching are very likely those that other members of your family and your network of friends use as well. Teaching your child these typical antecedents and responses in everyday situations and with the household objects that occur around you makes it much easier for your child to learn the antecedent behavior chains that others will use as well. Your child is learning what he needs to respond to many people, not just a few, and in many situations, not just the teaching environment. What about Max and Carrie? The stimulus or antecedent for Max's grabbing was the sight of Carrie playing fun games with the flashlight. What is the typical behavior that preschoolers use in response to the antecedent event of seeing another child with a desired toy? Yes, grabbing does occur, but ideally, they ask for a turn. So the mom, Alicia, is correct to prompt Max to ask Carrie for a turn with the flashlight. The typical reward for making the request is getting a turn with the toy. The goal here is to teach Max that when he sees Carrie with another toy, A, the antecedent, he should request a turn, B, the behavior, and hopefully be rewarded with a turn, C, consequence. Consider the behaviors and their antecedents in Understanding the Antecedent to Your Child's Behavior in the bonus PDF. Fill in some you have observed for your own child. Make extra copies of the form if you need more space. Summary of Step 3. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you now know how to see the antecedents that cue your child's behaviors in many situations. This step continues the process of understanding the ABCs of a variety of your child's behaviors, situation by situation. The next steps will address how to put together all that you have learned to build or change behaviors and skills your child uses to meet her goals. See if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important skills for understanding the relationships between antecedents and behavior, knowledge you will use in Step 4. If not, review this section, spend more time observing, and discuss your observations with the supportive other. Stay with this until you can easily see the antecedents preceding your child's behavior in a variety of situations. Activity Checklist. Am I identifying antecedents of my child's behaviors? I have spent some time observing my child and have made a list of my child's behaviors. All the behaviors on my list are observable behaviors, not states. I understand the antecedents, goals, and consequences underlying some of my child's desirable behaviors. I understand the antecedents, goals, and consequences underlying some of my child's undesirable behaviors. I have observed some behaviors and their antecedents in most of the 6 types of target activities. Step 4. Put the ABCs of learning together. Rationale. We have now discussed the basic ABC principles of learning, and if you have tried the preceding exercises, you've thought through your child's behavior the same way behavior analysts do. Step 4 is to put the ABC sequence together. Each child has unique ways of behaving, responding, and interacting with others. By observing your child's behaviors and the antecedents and consequences of those behaviors, you learn about your child's goals and the functions of his behaviors, why he acts the way he does. Your child's behaviors communicate what consequences or outcomes he has previously experienced, and what cues or antecedents lead to his behaviors. Unwanted behaviors like tantrums and aggression are part of all children's repertoires of behavior, and they become habitual if these behaviors have repeatedly led to goal achievement, to positive consequences. They are not naughty behaviors. They are functional behaviors for a child who uses them. They are the child's best efforts to attain his goals. Desirable behaviors, like giving a hug or kiss, occur for the same reason. They result in positive consequences for a child. All of your child's intentional behaviors follow the same rules. They are the most effective means your child has found for achieving his goal in a situation signaled by an environmental cue. Desirable or undesirable, they are functional. They work. Activity. Observe your child's socially desirable and undesirable behaviors, their antecedents, and their consequences. This exercise will help you see and describe the whole sequence underlying some of your child's habitual behaviors. It is so important to begin to see the ABC sequences that underlie your child's current repertoire of desirable and undesirable behaviors that we encourage you to spend the next few days learning to see them. If you learn this skill well, you will be able to use it effectively throughout your child's life to teach new behaviors, increase desirable behaviors your child already does, and reduce the frequency of your child's unwanted behaviors. These principles work in the elementary school period, during adolescence, and in adulthood. Once you learn to see them, they will start to pop out at you, which will give you many more ideas for ways to teach your child new or different responses to situations and experiences. Start by jotting down examples of your child's behaviors, B's, and goals. These are the keys to defining the antecedents, A's, and the consequences, C's. Once you have the B's and goals down, note the consequence and the antecedent, just as you have done earlier. These are probably getting easier and easier to see. Be sure to write down some desirable behaviors that your child demonstrates, and also some undesirable behaviors, things you wish your child did not do. Summary of Step 4. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you now know how to see the goals, antecedents, and consequences that underlie a number of your child's desirable and undesirable behaviors. This step continues the process of understanding the function of your child's behavior, situation by situation. The next step involves using this knowledge to teach your child new skills and to increase the number of learning opportunities you provide for your child. See if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with important skills for understanding the relationships that support your child's various behaviors, goals, antecedents, and consequences. Knowledge you will use in Step 5. If not, review this section, spend more time observing, and discuss your observations with a supportive other. Stay with this until you can easily see the antecedents, goals, and consequences underlying a variety of your child's most desirable and most undesirable behaviors in many situations. Activity Checklist. Am I putting the ABCs of learning together? I have spent some time observing my child and have made a list of my child's most and least desirable behaviors. I understand the goals, antecedents, and consequences underlying some of my child's socially desirable behaviors. I understand the goals, antecedents, and consequences underlying some of my child's undesirable behaviors. I have observed some of my child's most desirable and undesirable behaviors and have delineated their goals, antecedents, and consequences in most of the 6 types of target activities. Step 5. Use the ABCs to increase your child's learning opportunities and teach your child new skills or behaviors. Rationale. Every interaction you have with your child is a potential learning opportunity. To mobilize more of the many opportunities you have, you need to be aware of all the potential reinforcers that present themselves. Often these are things your child desires: food and drink, attention, favorite objects, comfort and affection, safety and security, interesting sights, sounds, and events, pleasant touch and movement. Or they may be unpleasant stimuli your child wants removed, such as hunger or thirst, noxious sounds, for example, vacuum cleaner, unpleasant sensations, for example, sticky hands or a messy diaper, frightening stimuli or barriers to your child's goals, For example, fixing a broken toy, opening a cupboard or refrigerator. Activity. Make sure your child is communicating goals as maturely as possible. You can corral these opportunities to work on your child's behalf by asking yourself these questions every time you deliver something your child wants or remove something your child dislikes. How is my child communicating her desires? Is she using the most mature communicative behaviors she is capable of to indicate her goals? Or am I providing all these reinforcers to a child who is doing little to communicate her goals? These are really important questions. One parent who asked herself this question said, "You know, he is like the little prince. He doesn't have to do a darn thing. We all meet his every need without him exerting any effort at all." It was a big insight for her. She was not asking of her son what we typically expect other children to do, to communicate as well as they can. How often have we all said to a whiny child, "Use your words," or cued a child who said, "I want more milk," to add please to that demand? Or to correct a child who grabs by taking the toy away, giving it back to the first child, and telling the grabber to ask nicely. We expect children to use their current communicative ability to achieve their goals, and we cue them or prompt them to use the desired behavior. So think about what communications your child is easily capable of. Reaching, pointing, vocalizing with intent, imitating sounds, making a choice between two, looking at you to communicate. Whatever communications are currently present in your child's repertoire and are easy for your child to do, that's how your child can be communicating his goals. When he is using undesirable behaviors to communicate, such as whining, screaming, or tantrums, do these things. Ignore those behaviors. Extinguish. Cue the desired behavior by modeling or prompting an appropriate behavior that will allow the child to achieve his goal, a reach, or a verbal request. Expect your child to use the appropriate behavior, and then allow your child to reach his goal. Reward. Make a list of your child's current communications, both verbal and gestural. These are the tools your child has for communicating her needs and desires. Now, keep those in mind when you next start to provide your child with something you know she wants. Clearly show your child it is available. That is the A, the antecedent. But hold back and wait to deliver it until your child has communicated for it, using one of the communications you have listed. Wait for the B, the behavior, and cue it if your child needs some help. Once your child communicates well, then deliver the C, the consequence, the reinforcer for your child's communication. What if your child does not produce the communication or uses an unwanted behavior such as whining? Ignore the unwanted behavior and prompt the behavior that is appropriate. Help your child do it. If your child can say a word, model the word. If your child can reach, put the object within reaching distance. If your child can point, model the point. If needed, physically guide your child through the response you are teaching. After your child acts, deliver. You have provided a learning opportunity, a full ABC sequence. Let's say the situation involves giving your child a peanut butter sandwich and your communicative goal for your pre-verbal child for her to use her voice to communicate requests. Let's say you have cut the sandwich up into 8 tiny bite-sized pieces for your child. If you hold the plate toward your hungry child, A, and your child reaches and says, B, and you hand the plate over, C, you have provided one learning opportunity for your child. Now let's say you are sitting at the table as well, and when your child reaches and says, you provide one piece of the sandwich. Your child stuffs it into her mouth and reaches and says, again. You deliver another piece. Your child's drink is also beside you, out of your child's reach. Your child reaches for the cup. You hold it up and say, drink? And your child reaches and says, You give the cup over. Your child has a drink, and you take it back. Over this meal, with the sandwich, the drink, and a few pieces of banana that you have also cut up, you have provided 15 or more learning opportunities for your child to learn to use her voice to request. And that doesn't take into account the number of times you have also imitated your child by taking a bite of your own sandwich, saying, yum, yum, and having a little imitation exchange. More learning opportunities. So here is an important way to start to build more learning opportunities into your child's day. By being aware of the many antecedents that precede the behaviors you are teaching. The many times you deliver reinforcers by meeting your child's goals. And the many ways you can help your child develop and practice an appropriate communicative behavior of some type before you deliver. Activity. Observe your child's behavior for occurrences of the ABCs. Spend some time reviewing your day with your child. Think about the times today you gave your child something you knew he wanted. Think about the times you removed something or changed something you knew was bothering your child. List them in the left-hand column of Observing the ABCs in the bonus PDF. Those are the reinforcers, or potential reinforcers, that you provided your child. For each one, remember what your child did that resulted in your action. How your child communicated his need or desire. Write that on the right-hand side. Here are the learning opportunities that you provided your child in these situations. If there was no child behavior that preceded your rewarding action, write down none in the right-hand column. There was a missed opportunity for learning. Over the next few days, see if you can become more aware of these potential missed opportunities, and instead wait for a child communication or prompt your child to communicate in some way before you provide the consequence, so that you are turning missed opportunities into learning opportunities. Make extra copies of the form if you need more space. Step 6. Change unwanted behaviors. Rationale. All little children, and most adults as well, have habits that are not very pleasing or attractive. In the lists you have just made, you may have identified some of your child's behaviors that you are not so happy with. Your child may scream to communicate a desire, or drag you by the hand, or bite to avoid someone, or to gain access to a desired object. Your child may fall on the floor and bang her head when her brother takes a toy, or when you refuse to give her another candy bar. Why does your child do these things? You may have already figured that out. In completing the activities earlier in this chapter, you may well have run into some of those unwanted behaviors. By analyzing the ABC sequence of these behaviors, you have evaluated them. You have learned the functional relations that supported the behaviors, the A and the C, If your child has some unwanted behaviors and you have not yet identified their ABC sequences, now is the time to do that. In this final step, we are going to explain how to help your child learn more acceptable behaviors to replace these unwanted ones. Activity: Identify an unwanted behavior and a possible replacement. A. Antecedent. B. Behavior. C. Consequence, desired outcome, equals increase in behavior, learning. A. Antecedent. B. Behavior. C. Consequence, unwanted outcome or none, equals decrease in behavior. Choose one of your child's unwanted behaviors that occurs often and that has a clear ABC frame. A behavior you would really like to change. Now remember the ABCs of learning. Look at your child's goal without expecting that your child will change goals. Ask yourself, what does he want? What is his goal? After you have answered that question, ask yourself, what do I wish he would do instead to ask for what he wants or achieve his goal? If he screams to get out of doing something he doesn't like or to get a toy, what do you wish he would do instead of screaming to request that you stop what he is being asked to do or to have access to the toy? If he bangs his head on the floor when you take his pacifier away, what do you wish he would do instead to achieve his goal? The behaviors you wish to see instead of the unwanted behaviors are called replacement behaviors. Rule 7. A good replacement behavior must be as easy for the child to do as the unwanted behavior, and must result in the same reward as quickly as does the unwanted behavior. The replacement behavior will work only if it is as functional, as efficient, as effective, as easy as the unwanted behavior. The replacement behavior already has to be in your child's repertoire, and you have to be able to prompt it easily. Activity: Teach the replacement behavior. So, with Rule 7 in mind, focus on the unwanted behavior you would like to see changed, and think about what else your child could do, now, easily, efficiently, to achieve the same goal. That is your replacement behavior. Write down how the sequence will look. What is the antecedent, A? What is your replacement behavior, B? What is your child's goal? And what is the consequence, C, or reward, for using the replacement, B? Got it? Here is an example. A equals your Pepsi. Unwanted B equals grabbing. Replacement B equals pointing. Child's goal equals your Pepsi. C equals your Pepsi. Now think about how you are going to prompt your child to do the replacement B as soon as the A occurs and before the unwanted B occurs. Get ready to prompt the replacement B and then deliver the C right away. If the unwanted B is already underway, ignore it. Prompt the replacement B and then provide the positive C. Example: You get your Pepsi and sit down on the couch. Your daughter appears and heads for the Pepsi. You pick it up, and as she looks at it, you say, "Want a drink?" Point. Point to Pepsi. You model. She points, and you give her a sip, but not the whole can. You take it back and get a drink. She reaches, and you say again, "Point." She points and gets a sip. This goes on a few more times until she is pointing without any instructions. No grabbing has occurred at all. What about Molly? As described earlier, Molly screams and grabs when her sister gets a glass of milk, and Dad tells her sister to give it to Molly and get another. A equals sight of milk. B equals scream and grab. Goal equals wants milk. C equals gets milk. Dad has to think of a replacement behavior for screaming and grabbing, and Molly has not yet learned to speak. What behavior can Molly use to request a glass of milk? Pointing to the milk? Signing drink or please? Vocalizing and making eye contact? Molly's family has to decide what kind of appropriate communication Molly should use when she wants something from someone else. They decide on a simplified please sign that their speech therapist has suggested. Her hand held against her chest. Now her parents need to create the learning opportunities for her to learn this replacement communication. The antecedent occurs. Molly sees big sister Tina get a glass of milk from the refrigerator, and Molly screams and grabs at Tina to get the milk. Dad goes to Molly, takes her hands off Tina, puts her hand to her chest to make the please sign, and says to Molly, "Please." As soon as Molly finishes making the sign, with Dad's help, Tina cooperatively hands Molly the milk and gets another. Although this is a step in the right direction, Dad thinks this through later and notices two things he would like to improve on. One, Molly is still screaming and grabbing, and two, Tina is still losing her original glass of milk. The next time, Dad is ready. When Tina asks, Dad encourages her to get two glasses of milk, and Dad moves right beside Molly. Tina gets the glasses of milk, and when Dad sees Molly look at the glasses of milk, he immediately walks her to Tina and helps her sign please. Then Tina gives Molly the second glass of milk, feeling very proud that she has helped her little sister learn to communicate. Now Dad has assured that Molly receives the milk for making the sign and not the scream. See what has happened? The same antecedent, seeing Tina with the milk, is now being linked with a desired behavior, an appropriate communication, which results in the same reinforcer, the milk, that has previously supported the unwanted behavior. Over time, if the family is consistent with this new routine, the please sign will become linked to the sight of the milk and all other objects she wants from another person, because that is the only way Molly will get the milk. The glass of milk will support a positive behavior rather than an unwanted one, while Molly learns a more useful and acceptable communication, and she still gets the milk. With this example in mind, go back to the unwanted behavior you have zeroed in on for your own child and consider how you will help your child use the replacement behavior for attaining her goal. Imagine how you will help your child or prompt your child to carry out the replacement behavior and then deliver the reinforcer. Start practicing as soon as you can imagine it. Caution. A coping strategy that families sometimes use in the face of unwanted behaviors is to try to avoid problem behaviors by placing fewer and fewer demands or expectations on the child. Although this is a very natural response to tantrums or aggression, it backfires in two ways, both of which, over time, reduce the child's learning. First, it takes away learning opportunities. If the child does not have to do anything to gain what he wants, then no new learning is taking place. Second, it reinforces either very immature behavior, like whining or grabbing, or unwanted behavior, like Molly screaming. Avoiding the problem behavior by giving in earlier does not change the use of unwanted behavior. Only by actively teaching a more desirable response can you really change your child's behavior. Your child can learn a more desirable response. Your child has learned one way of responding, and your child can learn a more desirable way as well. Summary of Step 6. If you have followed along and carried out the preceding activities, you likely have learned how to use your everyday interactions to support your child's more desirable social and communicative skills. You also know much more about why your child does all those things you wish she wouldn't do, and you know what consequences or rewards are supporting your child's use of those unwanted behaviors. You have developed some ideas about how to replace them with more socially desirable behaviors, and you have some ideas about how to avoid rewarding those unwanted behaviors. You have tried to prompt your child to use replacement behavior before the unwanted behavior even occurs, and you have been able, we hope, to reinforce the replacement behavior. See if you agree with most of the statements in the following checklist. If so, you are now armed with 1. Knowledge and skills for providing more learning opportunities within your everyday activities with your child, and 2. Strategies for replacing your child's unwanted behavior with more socially acceptable communicative behavior. If not, review this last section of the chapter and discuss these concepts and your observations with a supportive other. Ideally, someone who also understands the basics of behavior, like one of your child's professional team members. Mastering these concepts will help you help your child for many years to come, and your other children as well. Activity checklist. Am I understanding and dealing more effectively with undesirable behaviors? I have spent some time observing my own behavior and my interactions with my child when I am providing my child's preferred objects and routines. I am much more aware of what behaviors my child is using to request these preferred objects and routines. I am developing more skills in using each of these situations as a learning opportunity by either rewarding or cueing my child's use of more mature communicative behaviors. I have had some successful experiences in replacing one or more of my child's unwanted behaviors with a more desirable communication or behavior. I am much more aware of my tendency to provide positive consequences when my child uses an unwanted behavior, and I am doing it less. I am seeing positive effects of my new knowledge in my child's progress in learning to communicate to reach his or her goals. I am seeing positive effects of my new knowledge in my child's decreasing use of unwanted behaviors that I have focused on. I am creating more learning opportunities during daily play and caregiving activities by using the ABCs of learning. I am creating more learning opportunities in most of the 6 types of target activities. Chapter Summary. Behavior can be understood in terms of what takes place before the event, antecedents, as well as what follows it, consequences. This relationship or understanding of antecedents, the behavior itself, and consequences can be thought of as a set of linked actions, events, and circumstances that occur together in an environment. Understanding antecedents and consequences and their combined influence on behavior allows us to understand how a behavior functions for a child, and thus helps us know how to teach new behaviors and reduce unwanted behaviors in a systematic and effective way. Pay attention to times when you find yourself delivering positive consequences for behaviors that you would rather not reinforce. Screaming, throwing, crying, grabbing, fussing, whining, not using words, gestures. Pay attention to times when your child ignores your instructions or requests and continues to do what he was doing. In these situations, your child is being rewarded for ignoring you by getting to do what he wants to do. Pay attention to all the times you see your child wanting something and, through your skillful teaching, communicating nicely and receiving what he wants. You are providing great reinforcement for good behavior and an important learning opportunity. Pay attention to all the times your child communicates in an unwanted way, through immature behavior or unwanted behaviors, and you hold back on providing what he wants and thus help extinguish the unwanted behavior. Instead, you prompt your child to request or behave in a desired way and then deliver the reward, supporting your child's learning. Every time you reinforce a desired behavior, you provide a learning opportunity for your child. Every time you prompt your child to use a more mature or appropriate skill and reinforce that new skill, you provide a learning opportunity. Every time you model a desired behavior and your child imitates you, you provide a learning opportunity. And every time you make sure an unwanted behavior is not reinforced, but rather replaced by a more desirable behavior or skill, which gets your child what he wants, a learning opportunity has occurred. Children with autism need to learn and are very capable of doing so. Teaching them is about creating learning opportunities. Understanding the ABCs of learning helps you think about how to create learning opportunities to stimulate development and build more mature behavior. Refrigerator list. Goal: to use the ABCs for understanding and teaching new behaviors. Steps: everything happens for a reason. Identify your child's goals. What happens after your child's behavior solidifies it. What is your child doing to achieve his or her goals? Is it what you want? Be aware of the rewards you are providing and what behavior you are rewarding in the process. Use your child's goals in everyday activities to teach new skills. What do you wish your child would do instead? Answer this question and replace unwanted behaviors with more acceptable ones. Replacement behaviors need to be at least as easy, efficient, and effective as the behaviors you are trying to replace. The rewards that follow your child's new skills are what will make them stick. 10. The Joint Attention Triangle. Sharing interests with others. Chapter Goal: to help you teach your child how to share interest in objects with you. Why sharing interests and attention, joint attention, is so important. So far, we've been emphasizing how to increase your child's interest in paying attention to you. You've now learned, and we hope are using, methods for encouraging your child to pay attention to your face, voice, and actions. By teaching and promoting turn-taking, imitation, and non-verbal communication, You've been showing your child the power of two people communicating directly with one another. Your child has learned that looking at you, coming to you to express his needs and desires, following your lead, and seeing you follow his, and enjoying activities with another person, all have rewards that your child may not have grasped as easily as other children do. The importance of this is huge for your child's learning potential, both in structured educational settings and in the all-important social world, where children gain so much new information and understanding by interacting with others. But these dyadic, back-and-forth interactions aren't enough. Now it's time to teach your child how to share his attention to objects and other interesting events in the world with others. This capacity to share attention with others is called joint attention, or triadic attention. Triadic means three-way and refers to the three points of the attention triangle: your child, you, and your child's focus of interest. Joint attention allows people to share information, emotion, or meaning about an interesting event. Think about a time when you were at lunch with a friend and you noticed something unusual or interesting. You likely looked at the interesting spectacle and then were naturally motivated to share what you were seeing with your friend. After first looking at the interesting spectacle, you looked back to your friend, then commented on or pointed at the spectacle, and then looked back again at your friend to see if she was looking at it too, and to notice her expression. You were sharing your attention with your friend. This triangle of attention, the three-way interaction involving two people and an object or event, is joint attention, and it is a fundamental building block for young children's communication and language learning. Studies we authors and our co-workers have carried out, as well as other studies, have shown that children's joint attention skills are strongly related to their later language abilities. Parents and their young children often share moments of eye contact, smiles, or other expressions of interest, gestures, pointing, showing, and giving, and sounds or words to communicate about something one or the other has noticed. They might communicate about things like these: the names of objects. Mom holds up a round blue object in her hands and, as her daughter reaches for it, says, "It's a balloon." Actions happening in play. Dad points to the open spot in the puzzle and tells his son, "The tiger goes here." Instructions. A toddler finishes her drink and then hands her empty cup to Grandma while she looks at her and vocalizes, clearly communicating, "I want more." Experiences to share. A child points to a dog on the street, and Mom looks and answers, "It's a doggy." A fundamental skill required for joint attention is the child's ability to shift her gaze back and forth between you and the object. Before joint attention develops, children focus their attention mainly on either an object or a person during play, but they aren't yet able to shift their attention back and forth to focus on both the object and the person. At about 6 months of age, children learn to shift their gaze back and forth between an object and a parent's face. This skill contributes greatly to the joint attention skills and the related social communication and language learning that comes from it. What's happening in autism? Two difficulties seem to interfere with joint attention development in ASD. First, as we have said earlier, Children with ASD are a little less socially oriented to begin with. They seem to be less motivated to share and engage socially than other children are. Second, children with autism have difficulty learning to shift their gaze from people to objects easily and frequently. They tend to focus on objects more than people, and they may sustain their attention to objects for a long time. They may struggle to attend to multiple people or things in an environment, even when no demands are imposed. Sometimes their attention gets stuck on the first thing they are noticing, and they have difficulty flexibly disengaging their attention from the first object and moving on to the next. Most early intervention approaches focus one way or another on teaching young children with ASD to shift their gaze from objects to people and back. Our goal in helping you teach your child joint attention is to help him communicate with others about his shared experiences in the world. Without intervention, developing spontaneous joint attention skills is one of the harder skills for young children with ASD to learn. Why is it a problem? Without joint attention, children with autism tend not to share their thoughts and emotions about objects and events with important others, and so they lose out on these learning opportunities that contribute greatly to enhancing language, social, and cognitive development. Joint attention also involves reading another person's cues and understanding the partner's desires or feelings about the object. In other words, reading the partner's mind. When joint attention is limited, so is the ability to understand the meaning behind any situation, what something is called, how an object works, or what should happen during an activity by looking at and following people's eye gaze and gestures. Equally important, joint attention appears to strengthen children's desire to appreciate, value, and seek out social attention and praise from others when something fun and enjoyable happens. Remember how excited you were to share something you did with mom and dad when you were a child? It might have been a drawing you completed that day at school, or a great move you made during a board game, or when you tackled a new feat that you thought was impossible to do. Chances are that you looked right into your parents' eyes, gave a huge smile, and beamed with delight as they congratulated you on your success. This experience does not have to be different for children with autism. We want them to enjoy the excitement, praise, and pride that can result from social interactions. But to make this happen, they need to understand and use joint attention. What you can do to increase your child's joint attention skills. In its most basic form, joint attention involves the ability to shift eye contact or gaze between a social partner and an object or event. Once gaze shifts occur easily, children start to use three main gestures to share attention: giving, showing, or pointing at the object or event while making eye contact. Joint attention also involves sharing feelings about an object or event through gaze and facial expressions. The child looks at the object and then looks at the adult with a smile or frown, communicating her feelings about the object or event. How can you work with your child to develop joint attention? You are already doing some of the work by doing things you have learned in earlier chapters. 1. Drawing your child's attention to your face and eyes. Chapter 4. 2. Positioning yourself in front of your child for all activities to assist with eye contact. Chapter 4. 3. Pausing and teaching your child to use her body, talking bodies, to communicate her needs to you. Chapter 7. 4. Developing a number of sensory, social, and object routines that you do together. Chapters 5 and 6. Once you have increased your child's eye contact and your child's gesture communications, you and your child are ready for the 3 specific steps toward joint attention skills. Step 1. Teach your child to give you objects. Step 2. Teach your child to show you objects. Step 3. Teach your child how to point to objects to share experiences. We describe how to carry out each of these steps, give you some ideas for activities to try, and suggest what you can do to solve problems that may come up. Step 1. Teach your child to give you objects. Rationale. Joint attention is a kind of turn-taking, and it cannot occur unless your child is willing to hand over an object on request and then get it back. Because your child may not have the built-in motivation to interact in this way, you'll have to teach it from the ground up, starting with the fact that an outstretched hand is a request for the child to give you an object he is holding. Your earlier work with turn-taking, Chapter 6, has provided your child with a foundation for this skill. Continue working on this skill to lay the foundation for joint attention skills. Helpful tip. When you ask your child to give an object to you during play or caregiving activities, be sure to give it back as soon as you get it. If your child does not get it back right away, she will not be very motivated to give it to you. Remember the ABCs from Chapter 9. If the consequence of giving you an object is losing it altogether, you will not have reinforced giving. Quite the opposite. Activity. Teach your child to give objects to get help from you. Teaching your child to give an object to you when she needs help with the object is an important initial step. It motivates your child to learn the gesture because the action that follows, your help, works in your child's favor. That gesture becomes much more powerful, however, when your child learns to use eye contact as well as giving to communicate a need for help. When your child makes eye contact and gives an object to you for help, your child has made a powerful communication about her goals. Here are ideas for teaching your child to give you objects to receive help. Begin by showing your child a clear container, plastic zipper bag, lidded plastic container that your child cannot open by himself, and that holds a highly motivating object. This could be a favorite snack during snack time, a favorite bath toy during bath time, or part of a favorite toy during toy play. For example, the pieces to a puzzle. Your child will see the objects inside the bag and should reach for it when you offer it. Give the container to your child. Your child will likely struggle to open it. Then reach your open hand to your child while saying, "Need help?" Prompt your child to give you the container. Take it and open it quickly and give it right back saying, "Here's the object name." Repeat this in various activity types across the day. Bath toys in containers, food at meals in closed bottles or containers, fun toys in containers during toy play. Always use the same cues, your outstretched hand and the words, "Need help?" "I'll help you," and "Here's the object name." As this becomes a familiar routine over a few days or so, see whether your child will initiate the request. Give the container as usual, but do not offer your hand or ask about help. Wait, looking expectantly at your child. Your child is likely to hand you the bag. Say, "You need help. I'll help." And then, "Here is your object name," as you hand back the open container. Celebrate! Your child now